Congratulations, you have found the Lambcast, the official podcast of the Large Association of Movie Blogs, also known as the Lamb. The Lamb is the largest collective of online movie blogs and podcasts with 2,000 members and counting. Every week on the Lambcast, various members of the Lamb community get together to talk about our favorite subject, movies. So bookmark the Lamb and follow us on social media. Be sure to join us each week to hear a lively discussion of films and movie-related talk from our members. Join the flock at largeassmovieblogs.com.
You know Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Tony and the one wearing cardinal and gold and the puppet guy, but do you recall that most famous Lamb host of all? No, neither do I, but we'll muddle on anyway with that British guy who barely knows any Beatles songs. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Lambcast number 562, the December Movie of the Month. I'm your host, Richard Kirkham, from Kirkham A Movie A Day, and on the long-term hiatus Catching Up podcast. Nothing tells you it's December more than being inundated with ads for cars, jewelry, and electronics, unless it's being bombarded with Christmas-themed podcasts. So here on the Lamb, we've made it our duty to ensure that you know exactly what month it is. We're in the middle of three Christmas-related episodes, and this one represents the traditional December Movie of the Month. In the past, for the December Movie of the Month, we've had Scrooged, Die Hards 1 and 2, Gremlins, Batman Returns, and Meet Me in St. Louis. This year, 10 films battled it out for the honor, and walking away with nearly a third of the votes is a sleeper Christmas gem from 9 years ago, Arthur Christmas. Our show seems to get a little bit bigger each year, and no, that's not because of exponential population growth. So let's not waste too much time, and let's get straight to meeting our guests. First up, he really does believe that stray elephants breed in the drains of Paris. From Coogs Reviews, our own director's chair feature director, it's Tony Coogan.
Yeah, hello, thanks for having me on.
Oh, glad to have you, Tony. Our second guest is anxiously awaiting his sausage nailed to a piece of bark. From the Forgotten Film Cast and Walt Sent Me, Todd, not Toad, Liebenau.
That actually sounds like a wonderful Christmas present, so I'm down for that.
Our special guest this week is a man who loved our feature film so much that he dropped it down in his Christmas draft list to the point that someone more aware and clever than he was able to snatch it. A guy who I failed to have the decency to finish off with a rock. From Life vs. Film and the Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, former host of the Lambcast, Jay Cluett.
I hosted all of my 304 missions without this kind of malarkey, Richard.
Well, we're going to have plenty of malarkey, I hope, today. And finally, the film's champion, showing us how wrong we once were to believe that it was impossible to teach women to read, returning as a second December Movie of the Month champion from Hollywood Consumer, Amanda Kirkham.
Hello.
Well, congratulations, Amanda. Looking forward to talking about this, as we've already done a couple of times. As the champion, we're going to turn the show over to you and let you host. So go ahead, take it away.
All right. So, of course, today's film is from 2011. It's an animated feature with a lot of great voice talent. And it's the story of the Clauses and Arthur Christmas in particular, who is trying to make sure that every child gets a gift on Christmas after one is forgotten, and he and Grand Santa go on a journey to try to deliver this bike to this girl who desperately wants to believe in Santa. And I remember seeing it in theaters and loving it and just thinking it was wonderful. And of course, as soon as it came out on Blu-ray, adding it to our annual Christmas lineup of Christmas movies. And so I just, of course, want to start with everybody's sort of history with the movie. Did you see it before? Is this the first time you're seeing it? So let's start with Tony. What's your history with the movie?
Okay, so my history of this film. So I didn't see it in cinemas, but when I was at university, and was one part of the things part of was my university's film society, and one of the years they did a Christmas set of films, and one of the films that was chosen was Arthur Christmas, and watched it, and it's now become a kind of a Christmas classic in my household, to the point where I think it was 2018 when The Lamb did the Christmas movie tournament, and After Christmas is the one I championed, and I also championed this to be movie the one from a few years ago. And I think it's also good for this film to be movie the one this year, so that we end up bookending the year with Aardman. We started the year with Chicken Run, ending the year with Half a Christmas. I mean, it's a good way to, it's just bookending the year with Aardman that feels right.
I like that. And Todd, what's your history with the movie?
I did not see it in theaters, but of course there are very few movies I see in theaters. I think it was probably at least a year, maybe even 2 years after it came out, that I finally got around to grabbing the DVD from the library. And I think it's very enjoyable. Things I really like about the film. It's got kind of a different feel than some of the Aardman films to me. Not saying that that's a bad thing, but it always takes me a moment where I go, this just doesn't quite feel like it's in the same universe as like a Chicken Run or things like that. But I think it's still a very enjoyable film. And we'll dig into that more in a little bit.
Yeah. And Jay, I know that you're quite a fan of the film. What's your history with it?
I hate it. I hate it so much. And I love this film. It's one of the few films that it's pretty much the only film we watch every Christmas. It's kind of become a tradition in our house to watch the film once we put up the Christmas tree, which we did last night. Well, I say we, because I had to take notes. I relaxed and watched my wife put up the Christmas tree whilst I watched the film, which was more than okay with me. I missed in the cinemas as well. I don't know. I love Aardman as a studio, but I missed this one, and I missed Early Man, because Early Man got terrible reviews, and I finally caught up with it, and they were justified. But After Christmas, I wish I had seen it in the cinema. I just kind of stumbled upon it, DVD, TV, I don't know where, and just from day one, I've loved it, and I've watched it every year since. And it's just a delightful way. Todd's comment that it doesn't feel like a lot of the other Aardman films. I think there's too much Sony involvement. It's part Aardman, part Sony Pictures Animation.
Sony, Jay. Remember the batteries. It's Snowy, not Sony.
Yes, okay. But fine, it's too much Snowy. just a little. I prefer my Aardman pure. But it's still a wonderfully enjoyable film. And I went into this still burned from Richard stealing it from me in the Christmas movie draft. It was my film. It was mine to have and to keep and to love forever. And he just cruelly ripped it from my grasp.
You waited till the last round on it.
Because no one had heard of it before, Todd. No one knows about After Christmas. It was mine to unveil into the world as this hidden gem. And
you thought you had it
behold,
in your back pocket. Other people did too.
Indeed. So I actually went into it this time around thinking, okay, what's wrong with After Christmas? What can justify, like, anyone who has this on their team picked a bad team? So I did pick up a few... it's hard to say they're bad things about the film, but I found a few little niggles for future watches. But for the most part, yes, it's a very enjoyable Christmas film.
All right. Well, we'll get into the details and what may potentially be wrong with it, although I don't...
I'm ruining it for all of you.
Yeah. But, Dad, why don't you... I know you went and saw it in theaters, but...
Oh, yeah. I went and saw it in theaters, usually the day after Thanksgiving here in the United States is a holiday, and we don't have work. And for most of the last, I don't know, 40 years or so, we've gone to multiple films on that day. Since the theater's open, that's a busy time of the year when we'd see multiple pictures. And Arthur Christmas, I think, opened at the Thanksgiving time, so we went to see it. I don't remember the crowd being huge. It was a good-sized crowd, but not a huge-sized crowd. But we loved the picture. And it was, I think, in 3D. I'm trying to remember if we saw it in 3D or not. My memory is a little fuzzy on that, but I loved it immediately. I did buy it on Blu-ray in 3D, so I actually have a 3D Blu-ray copy. I don't know if anybody knows. That was a thing for about 6 weeks. And I have a TV and a Blu-ray player that will do that, but I haven't used it, I think, except the first week that I got it. And but the movie is, I think, very entertaining. It's very sweet. There are plenty of places where it will bring a tear to the eye, but mostly it brings a laugh and a chuckle here and there. And there are so many things about it that are irresistible that it was a pleasure for me to see that it was being suggested and that it won. So that meant that we were going to watch it again, which we would have done anyway, but get to talk about it as well.
And for all of you who didn't see it in theaters, you lucked out in not having to sit through the Justin Bieber music video over the credits.
Well, that's one of my negative points about it, is that end credits song. Oh, dear.
Yeah, well, in the theater, it included the music video, so
Sorry. I feel very sorry for you.
The one thing that I will say was not good about that experience.
Is there a Bill Nighy video for his opening end credits song?
That would have been no.
That would make it all the more worthwhile, especially if it's his character from Love Actually.
Yeah.
At least they didn't tie in Bieber in the film in general and have, like, you know, where they were saying, "I'm a Belieber," and things like that.
Yeah.
You could have voiced an elf easily, I think.
They've put the crop of British, a lot of the crop of British acting talents playing the elves.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I want to touch upon is all of the sort of guest appearances as elves. But first off, any general sort of thoughts around the story, and I know, Jay, you have a couple of nitpicky things, but
I'll save them for the end. It's fine.
Okay. So why don't we go back to you, Tony? What are your general thoughts around the film?
So yeah, I think for me, I find this, you enjoy this, like, the story of the film. I think it has that good mix of having the balance between the traditionalist elements of Christmas represented by Grand Santa and the more modern elements of Christmas represented by Steve, and it's finding that balance between those two. That kind of has a good through line through the film. And it also helps that the main character of Arthur is just I found to be a very lovable presence. A lot of it's helped by James McAvoy's performance. It has this good, real earnest nature to it. And it just feels really heartwarming whenever he's on screen. And it is, like, the Christmas spirit that Arthur has is very infectious.
Yes. Yeah, I think the voice casting is just wonderful in this, and James McAvoy's laugh is perfect. I quite enjoyed that, and I agree. I like the mix of sort of the updated things that maybe Santa would have to do along with sort of the traditional story. Dad, what do you think?
Well, I tell you, the generational story is the thing that I think helps make this more than just your typical Christmas picture. The current Santa has his reservations, in a rather clueless way, about moving on. The supposed future Santa has issues concerning how things should be done, and look, technology is taking over, and the world's a different place, and we need to get with the times. And Grand Santa's full of nostalgia for what used to be, and I sometimes feel like I'm all three of them at the same time, so I really appreciated the notion that, you know, these concepts are kind of fighting it out amongst themselves in the story. I that's the thing that I thought was, you know, add solid stuff to the story. You know, Arthur is the character that everything focuses around, though, and he is just sweet as all get out, and I can't understand why somebody wouldn't just see right away, here's what the spirit of Christmas is supposed to be. The problem, of course, is that he is not necessarily as graceful as we might want him to be. If he was in the Santa Claus, we know that he wouldn't last past the first Christmas because he'd trip on the ceiling and fall down and die and have to be replaced immediately. But that's not the story that's going on here. It's just, you know, he's maybe a little more naive than he should be, but it makes him appealing. He's clumsy. And it's a question about, you know, how should he fit in with this family, and how does he fit in with their traditional tasks? I also love the fact that animated films give you a chance to see this visualization of the North Pole in so many different ways, and this is another creative way of doing that. I kind of enjoyed that. We've got the Sleigh One, and we've got the home base command center where everything's happening, and it's a mix of traditional elves helping out Santa get down the chimney and computer technology. It's like Amazon has taken over and put on the beard for the holiday.
Yes, that's kind of a perfect comparison. Amazon is the Santa of this year, apparently.
Steve is Jeff Bezos. I wouldn't
go that far.
Oh, maybe they're the elves of this year.
Yes.
Okay. Todd, what about you? What are your sort of general thoughts around the movie?
Well, yeah, I'll jump off what Richard was saying there. I think one of the things that intrigues me the most about this film is its presentation of the North Pole and the process as to how all the gifts are delivered. I think that's, for me, always one of the most intriguing aspects of any film that deals with the whole Santa Claus mythology. You know, we've seen many different examples. You mentioned the Santa Claus, you know, and there's Polar Express and all these others where we see very different interpretations of how this all works and all these things that, you know, as a kid we're left to just go, oh, well, you know, Santa just does it, you know, just to see the different realizations of how it all happens. I've always found a very intriguing aspect of Santa Claus films. And I like this one. I like the whole technology aspect, you know, the gigantic Independence Day sized spaceship that has the cloaking device and, you know, it projects the night sky and all that kind of stuff. I think there's some really clever stuff there with that. And then also what you were kind of saying about the family dynamic, I think it's fun just to see, you know, kind of the different generations butting heads a little bit. You know, I mean, it certainly kind of is reminiscent of what a lot of families go through in their own Christmas gatherings, you know, when it comes to just you've got the different kinds of quirks of each family member and the disagreements that happen and things like that. So in a lot of ways, it's fun to see this family of Santa Claus people going through the same type of difficulties with the family dynamic that a lot of other folks do. So I thought that's an interesting aspect. And the voice cast is great. You've all kind of mentioned the voice cast. I think that's the strongest aspect of this film. When it started, you know, I went, oh, yeah, Aardman, do I need to turn on the subtitles? No. Yeah, this miss some of the others.
And Jay, what about you? What are your sort of general thoughts around the movie?
Kind of the same things as everyone else. Really, I appreciate the family dynamic. You know, I kind of wish we'd drill down a little bit more on like Santa's. He provides presents for all around everyone in the world, but he can't get stuff for his own kids. He gets tonight, but he's there for everyone, but not for the family that's near him. So I liked that dynamic. The voice cast is incredible. I've written a post before just on that opening scene with the Mission Impossible style elf acrobatics delivering all the presents. I think that's a phenomenal opening to the film. Just that gets you, that really brings you into the world of like, this is where we've updated Christmas. We're explaining how Christmas it's still ridiculous. It's still nonsense. But if it were to exist, this is how it will be done. This is like they're going to diffuse car alarms and launch cans of dog food at dogs to stop them barking and adjust the timer on the oven for the turkey. And they've got suction cups to go down down the other side of the stairs. And
just they recreate the wrong trousers.
Yes, they fire a peanut at a parrot to stop it from barking. There's, I think my defining it, like one image of the film is a wrapped slinky going down the stairs, but remaining fully wrapped. I just love that. And I wanted there to be one line of dialogue saying, we've developed this new elastic wrapping paper that can cover anything, even when it moves. So I love that image. So I just love the way they thought about Christmas, updated to a modern world, still have a very heartwarming story, but still took it in directions like, who writing this thought, hey, let's have them face off against some lions in Africa. No, that's just how an elf wraps a lion's head. Let's chuck that in this kid film. So I just love the random directions it takes, but it still makes sense to a degree. Yeah.
I will say, though, that a few of the things you mentioned there, Jay, are where I do have a few nitpicks where I think that they could have, again, maybe gone a little bit further with stuff. You know, the whole thing with the animals and they're floating around and that kind of leads to the alien invasion subplot. I think the alien invasion subplot could have gone further. That's a great opportunity to do something weird and quirky, and especially with the kind of the realization at the end where the old sleigh has this, you know, disguise device that makes it look like a flying saucer, and you go, oh yeah, over the years, all the UFO sightings, that's just been Santa Claus. You know, that's a lot of fun, but I don't know. I think that there could have been a bit more of a, like a War of the Worlds type angle where people are, you know, panicked more because, you know, more than just the government officials that you know, there's aliens or whatnot. That could have been fun. And I think a bit more in line with the Aardman sense of humor. And then going back to that sequence at the beginning, the Mission Impossible thing, it's a really great sequence. But at the same time, as I was watching it, I was going, I don't know that Aardman has as good a grasp on an action sequence as, say, my mind went to Pixar and The Incredibles. Okay, you know, yeah. It's a different category, and I think that they do a valiant job here. But there's a few moments where I thought this is not as polished of an action sequence as I've seen in some other animated films.
It's tough to compare it to The Incredibles and action wise, though. That's
agreed.
Even outside of animation, that's just one of the best action films ever.
Todd's got a lot of comparisons to be made here. Basically, he's looking for the Independence Day before Christmas, and that's not exactly, you know, what's going on here. I can see, you know, look, it's on individual elements being measured against the top-notch elements of films that are very different from it, it might not be perfect, but in the context in which it's being presented here, I think it works really well. It accomplishes its goal. It's supposed to entertain and make us laugh and smile at things, and it does that all the time. When we get to those potential, you know, little drawbacks or issues that people have, we can talk more about that, but I don't have any problem with magic dust causing the animals to fly up, chasing the reindeer up.
I was concerned about whether the dust wore off gradually or sometime in the future, those animals would just drop. I'm hoping for the gradual.
It's like the frogs in Magnolia, right?
Yes, exactly.
I'm going to assume it's gradual because it's a children's film. So.
Well, that's why they didn't show it.
Yeah. Of course, they do shoot down Santa, so...
I mean, there is a joke about cannibalism in and finishing someone off with a rock.
Everything Grand Santa says is glorious.
Yeah.
Just take
there
everything...
There you go.
There's Bill Nye saying it as well. Just everything...
Put that on a continuous loop at Christmas time.
Like, no one lives in Canada. He's never heard of Toronto.
I think Bill Nighy is the standout as far as the voice cast goes. He just steals the show with everything. There's a lot of great performances throughout here. I think that, you know, all the voice casts really fit their characters really well. And it was fun. I was watching it with my kids last night, who I think we watched it with them years ago when we saw it for the first time, but they're much older now and couldn't remember things. As we're watching it, they're going, who's that voice? Why do I know that voice? And I kept having to remind them of what character in Harry Potter these various people,
you know? Rufus Scrimgeour.
Yeah.
Umbridge.
Slughorn.
Yeah.
Well, that actually
Hagrid's in there.
Yeah, true.
So that actually brings up the next topic, which was going to be the voice actors. Bill Nighy obviously is a bit of a standout. Is there anybody else that anybody thought was particularly good? Or, I mean, I think James McAvoy, of course, is great and perfect. Anybody else have any favorites?
I think the problem is
they're all
that,
perfect.
Just if you go with that traditional like Father Christmas, Jim Broadbent's a great choice for like that more traditional Father Christmas. It's one where he's played Father Christmas in a few other films, and if I'm right in thinking, he's doing it for the Aldi Christmas adverts.
Oh,
he's got a little niche now playing Father Christmas in in UK productions, and it is such a perfect fit for his voice.
Yeah. But even my wife and I were talking, we don't like his Father Christmas. He's great as it, no problem there, but the character of his Santa is someone we don't like.
Yeah. It's
because he you know, when a child gets missed, he blames Steve. When no child is missed, he takes all the credit. It's just, I've known bosses like that in the past. And it's,
I think one of the challenges with this film for me, I mean, again, not trying to, you know, drag too much here on the things that I wish were different, but, you know, it does bother me a little bit that all the Santas are kind of selfish and kind of jerks at times, you know, and, you know, but
it makes sense though that they're basically like child stars. They're celebrities from day one. They're known across the world as this figurehead. So that's gonna get to your ego a little bit and turn you into a bit of a narcissist. So
sure,
I can completely understand them being unlikable people.
I agree that I think Jim Broadbent is a lot of fun here. I like how kind of he's a little bit aloof, and you kind of sense that he's tired. You know, he's been doing the Santa thing for a long time, and you know, even though he says I can't wait till next year, you kind of think that he just kind of feels like he's got to keep it going, otherwise he's not going to be anything anymore. He's going to be pathetic sitting in a chair watching TV like his old man, you know. And you know, but you get the sense in just the way he delivers things that the years have taken their toll on him, you know. So I thought that was good.
Yeah, I don't want to be a downer on this, but I think his Santa is early stages, and it makes me a little concerned that you know, he doesn't really realize what's going on sometimes, and he doesn't remember where Arthur is working in the company. He's blaming Steve is just kind of his default position. I've seen this behavior before. You know, it's easier for somebody who's losing it to point in another direction and find an excuse. And you know, he's not a disaster yet, but he's on the brink of being there, and so he's a little disconnected from what's going on. I think when he realizes that a child has been missed and it is something that matters, he's conflicted about what to do. He's just uncertain, and he's turning to Steve, who is probably not the best choice, who's looking for efficiency, and he ought to be trusting his own voice. And I think that Arthur represents the voice of what he really wants, but he's like I said, he's losing it a little bit. He's losing it a little bit. You know, Grand Santa has lost it quite a bit, but he's not... Well, I guess he's a little demented, but... but in the kind of wacky fun way that we want in an animated cartoon, as opposed to the depressing way that we're going to get with Anthony Hopkins next year.
Well, I actually think there's an interesting parallel that I think is obviously intended between Grand Santa and Santa, and or the current Santa. And I think you're right. I think that there are some potential dark undertones there, and they choose to stay on the lighter side of things. But I mean, Grand Santa's story about taking the sleigh out and then having his son have to tell him we need to you can't fly anymore. It's somebody going to parent and saying you can't drive anymore. You nearly killed somebody, and that's a pretty dark thing. And I think you're right. I think that I think it's Malcolm is the current Santa.
Yes.
He's not quite ready to admit it, and I think that the final point at which he's seeing it is, of course, when the three of them are in the closet there, and he's looking at all of them and going, why were we so sort of involved in ourselves? Arthur just wanted to make sure that the child got the toy and wants to see the joy on her face when she opens it, and that's the spirit of Christmas. And that's kind of his moment of realization of, it's time. It's time to move on.
And that scene is a wonderful scene. I mean, you know, the movie is fun and you know, lighthearted and all that kind of stuff. And you know, I though there's a bunch of really sweet moments throughout. I can't say I was getting emotional, but the closet sequence there where they're peering out and watching her get the gift. Yeah, I was tearing up a little bit. I'll admit it.
Yeah. Yes, there's so much of it that's very sweet. I think there's also, we've touched upon the humor. There's so much of it that's incredibly funny. And I have to say, I think the unsung hero of the whole story is Mrs. Claus. She's gone and taking the reindeer out to do its business and getting attacked by polar bears. And she's taking classes about piloting. And
she's negotiating all the treaties.
Yes. So she's the one keeping them all together. And she's the one mashing up Grand Santa's food when he can't chew it. I like that there's obvious humor for the kids, you know, slapstick kind of like in your face stuff. But there's also a lot of, I'm sorry, her walking through while they're having dinner and like carrying the bag of reindeer poop is just
That's a direction that a sequel could have taken. Is Arthur is now Santa and he's trying to find his Mrs. Claus, or
yes,
trying to find his partner. Oh,
there you go.
So Santa Claus too.
I've never seen a Santa Claus film, Tony. I pride myself on this, so I don't know.
Tim Allen is Buzz Lightyear and
nothing else.
Why is it you take pride in this?
I don't know. I hear they're bad, and so no. I'm fine.
The first one is quite good. The sequels are sequels, you know.
they have their elements and that you could take, but the first one is, that's not our subject.
If you want to have
today.
Me back for a franchise look back next December, Richard, then
it could happen.
We have to talk about the elves. We haven't we haven't mentioned the elves, and I think there's a lot of fun elements to all the different jobs that they have. But tying it back in with the voice cast, as I'm watching the end credits, I went, Michael Palin. Where was Michael Palin? And then I was, oh my gosh, I did not realize that Michael Palin.
I think of these like big names like mostly in the elves. I mean, I didn't reckon. I kind of got Sanjeev Bhaskar in there, and I didn't get Nick West. But with Michael Palin's one, in the cadence of how he speaks, you can tell it's that was Michael Palin.
This is actually one of my problems, is the pitching of all these famous voices, so you can't tell who they are. And at the end, when you get the end credits, you're like, oh, Rhys Darby, Joan Cusack, Jane Horrocks. Like, these are recognizable names. Like, I should be able to tell who it is, but because they pitch them really high, they all sound the same. And I get it, they're elves. They're supposed to be high-pitched voices, but I don't like that. I want to be able to listen to it and think, ah, that's Robbie Coltrane.
I think with the voice pitch, I think it works best with Ashley Jensen.
It works incredibly with Ashley Jensen. She's perfect.
I wouldn't be able to recognize a word Jane Horrocks was saying no matter what. You know, she's that one in Chicken Run that I go, huh?
Well, she's notoriously great at different accents and voices anyway, so she could be pitching it up on her own. Who knows?
Well, I thought Laura Linney did a great voice. Sigourney Weaver impression.
And I liked Mark Wooden. He's a acquired taste comedically. He plays Steve's assistant elf, Peter, kind of the fawning guy. I liked his performance as well. So he's good in this.
Yeah,
Does a better performance of Christmas Summer here than he does in the Nativity films.
Yeah. Again, I've never seen a Nativity film. Another point of pride in my Christmas not watching films.
Yeah, I mean, first one's called. Second one's pretty bad. Third's unwatchable.
Okay, noted. I will not be returning for a Nativity franchise look back.
I'm not sure. Well, I know we could put it on a list, you know. We can have a poll on it and see if people will vote for it. I don't think it would be one of my choices. I don't even know anything. I've never heard of it.
I don't know that series. I mean, I've heard of it, but I think it's much more of a your side of the pond type of a thing.
We're talking about Arthur Christmas here.
There are a lot of things about this movie that I kind of go, all right, I don't understand that. I mean, like, I'm a dumb American, okay? I've seen things in other movies, you know, like the you know, what's the deal with the crowns? I've seen that in other Christmas movies, you know, at like British Christmas gatherings.
Oh, the paper hats.
They come out of the snappers or the crackers.
The jokes that are always terrible.
Terrible jokes. It's always the joke in the film, the tinselitis. That's always every cracker has tinselitis.
Yeah,
that's always that joke. But yeah,
the Vicar of Dibley Christmas special, and where every single cracker joke is the exact same terrible one.
Yes. Again, now Tony, you have to explain what the Vicar of Dibley is. do you have crackers at Christmas dinner in America? The cylindrical things that you pull out of the little...
They are available, and we have traditionally included crackers as decorations on gifts, so that instead of Christmas dinner, they are part of the gift-giving process, you know, kind of like a tag. And I would make people read the damn joke or quote. I'd make them put on their hats, and if the snapper didn't crack, I would find the little device inside of it and make it crack myself.
Oh, good. Because I've never had a Christmas dinner without crackers. It's kind of unheard of, as far as I'm aware, to not have them. But somehow my paper hat always gets lost. So I always get a crack without a hat in it. I don't know what happens.
The paper hat always rips when I try and put it on.
I don't even try to put it on. I hide it in my back pocket. I hate them.
The Christmas spirit is alive and well on the Lambcast.
Yep.
I mean, you just need to get Rob Gilbert to do his version of a Christmas cracker. Those ones are always would be better.
Again, Tony, read the room.
Again, I'm reading through my pitch everything to you, Jay. I mean, who else would remember the Taskmaster Christmas cracker bit other than you?
Well, this seems like a good point at which to bring up the things that people maybe didn't like so much about the movie. Jay, why don't you start off, since you were keeping track of it this time around?
I haven't got a lot, and they're all very minor. But during the opening heist, I think, not the heist, you know, the present delivery, an elf scans a kid, elf scans another kid, comes up like 53%, not enough, or not great. So he scans himself, 82%, stocking full of gifts. No. The first kid's got 73% and gets fewer presents than the kid who got 50-odd%. That's... No. That elf needs to be fired. Needs to be disciplined.
That's going to go through HR. Yeah.
Yeah. That's wrong. That's... Should not have... That's terrible.
All right. Here we have a name for people like that. Thank you, Kieran.
I wish to speak to the manager. We mentioned the kind of the silly humor for the kids. I didn't really like Grand Santa's full Steve flying into the gravy. It's just kind of... There's enough comedy to him to not have that. I didn't like that thing. I happened to pause it at an inopportune moment during when Santa is caught by a waker. And the kid has got a poster next to his bed. Yeah. He's got two. One of them has like tinsel hanging around it, and I love that the tinsel was hanging asymmetrically. It's like, this is some random scrap of tinsel we have. Where can we put it? Around this picture in the kids' room. I really liked that kind of production design. But there's a poster next to his bed, and that poster is for Open Season. So I like this film a little bit less now, just because there's a poster for Open Season in it. Because like Aardman, they fill every frame with in jokes and puns and references. Just watch any of the Wallace and Gromit films; they're full of bread puns and who knows what else. That was a perfect opportunity to put up a poster for a fake film with a fun name as like an Easter egg. But no, they put up a poster for another Sony film that came out 5 years before this one and is terrible. And it doesn't even say Open Season on it. It just has the cast of it and coming soon. And I thought, what? Why? What are you... You're wasting space that could be with... Well, you know, joking that.
There's like a half a dozen Open Season direct-to-video sequels. So, you know, they got to promote that franchise.
No, they don't. they could stop making them. My one other thing, I've already mentioned the end credits song. I said earlier, Santa, he gets checks for the boys, cash for father. But in the scene, this is real nitpicky. This is getting down to deep blue sea, the podcast levels of nitpicking. But in a scene where when they're stealing the reindeer from Rich Hall, who I love, plays a character who looks like Rich Hall. It's great. The farmer, he says, as Arthur says, he's flying away, I would give you some money, but we don't have money in my world. What the hell is the check for? What's the cash for? What's going on here? This film's trash.
He's playing a part. He's not talking real. He's playing the part of an alien.
Yeah, he's playing the part of an alien. He's not talking about being from the North Pole.
Didn't like it. He wasn't playing an alien. He just happened to, he wasn't aware he looked like an alien as he was saying that. I hated it. Film's garbage. Never watching it again. That's the end of my list.
Well, you know, I'll jump off there and say, and again, this is a small nitpick, but I don't know. I'm not the biggest fan of some of the character design in this. We're talking about the look of the characters. I mean, it's fine and all, but I guess on the one hand, one of the things I love about Aardman is the lovable ugliness of some of their characters. You know, when it comes, you know, think about the look of Chicken Run or Wallace and Gromit. You know, these human characters are very different looking than those type of things. And I've always gotten a certain amount of enjoyment by that weird look of those characters. But I mean, here they're made to look much sweeter and all that. But I don't know, the way that they all have these bulbous noses, everybody looks like they have a cold to me. And that kind of bothered me a little bit, maybe especially in the age of COVID. I don't know.
Yeah, I think going on from that, I think I'd say this feels more American than the other Aardman films.
Yes.
I was reading the book that Peter Lawton and David Sproxton did about the history of Aardman, and they said there that this Arthur Christmas was done primarily in California rather than at their studios in Bristol. And I think also it's that the animation itself is CG. But it's the Aardman's previous CG film, Flushed Away, kept that Aardman character design style that you expect from their stop motion films. So I think with Arthur Christmas, it doesn't have that tactile feeling that you get with the other Aardman films.
Yeah, well, you would barely know it's an Aardman film because it doesn't have the claymation kind of animation in it, and it's
I'd say it's just, I do see the more of a Sony film than an Aardman film in terms of the design and the animation. The script, I'd say, is Aardman, having a look at one of the screenwriters, Peter Bainham. He's someone who's worked extensively with Armando Iannucci, Chris Morris, and Sacha Baron Cohen, and you can get that kind of feel in some of the darker jokes, especially with Grand Santa.
Yeah, well, and I'm certainly not suggesting that, you know, every Aardman film like Wallace and Gromit. I mean, animation studios change the look of characters from film to film. I mean, the Pixar catalog would be pretty boring if all the characters look just like they do in Toy Story or whatever. You know, you make changes, you know, depending on the film. But I don't know. I guess some of the Aardman quirkiness in the character design is not there, and the choices that they do make, I don't know, just didn't grab me.
I think it's appropriate for us now to give you a whack on the head with a sock full of sand and a dab of whiskey on your lips, and let's move on, because you guys clearly don't remember a thing.
All right, well, going in a more positive direction, what about favorite sequences? I know we've talked a little bit about the Mission Impossible sequence at the beginning, but does anybody have a favorite sequence that they like, that they want to shout out?
I like the climax in Cornwall with Bryony wrapping the bike as he's riding it. With the, I mean, three pieces of sticky tape, fine.
Three bits of sticky tape and the very obvious co-op product placement.
Yep, riding past a cooperative corner shop. Absolutely fine. At the end of the film to keep everything going, and all the Santas converging to drop that last present. It's a fitting finale for the film, I would say.
I like the emotional element of the letter at the beginning with Arthur in his office, and then Santa reading the letter later on in the film and kind of getting a sense of what he's missed in his life. That's the kind of emotional heart of the story, and it's not inventive in the way it's visualized, it's not hysterical, and when it comes off, it's just touching because it's got a personal element to it that's full of sentimentality, and you know, I'm a big marshmallow, so I like that kind of stuff. So that those would be my recommendations.
Christmas isn't a time for emotions, Richard.
Yes. Thank you, Steve.
I agree that I think some of the more emotional sequences are the standouts. So we mentioned the moment at the end with the, you know, watching outside the closet and that type of thing. But I also really enjoy the, let's just call it the trashing of Toronto. I don't know. I thought that was a fun sequence.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that'll be when they turn the slain to a train.
Yeah.
Well, I like all of the stuff with Evie. I think I like them going in and opening the door and seeing the reindeer. And, you know, you've just had this whole sequence with all of this updated technology, and then you get back to sort of the more traditional story. And I think the reindeer just are so friggin' adorable. And I do like that they... I don't know, maybe I'm reading a little bit too much into it. Maybe this was intended, but I like that they naturally go to Arthur. They kind of ignore Grand Santa. They're like all up on Arthur. And I know he's terrified of them, but I kind of like it. What was that?
They can smell fear.
Well, no, I think he's the real Santa. He's the intended Santa, because they're all interested in him. Like, okay, what do you want? And, then of course you get into sleigh, and Grand Santa talks about the, you know, that Steve never got in the sleigh, never got taken out, but that, you know, he took his, Malcolm out and got to see his face, you know, when he first got to ride in the sleigh, and he's looking over at Arthur, and Arthur's got this, you know, giant grin despite the fact that he's terrified of heights and everything.
And everything.
Buttons.
Well, I like that sequence.
Yeah. Oh, and the elves panicking when they think they're going to melt down the whole North Pole.
I love that the button saying,
"In 16!
No Christmas for 6 years, the elves all alone." They're like indentured slaves, the elves. I want to kind of dig into their world a bit more, but there's something going on there. It doesn't seem quite right.
Well, I like the one that shouts out about the fire at the beginning that, you know, they reference, "I lost everything in that fire."
Oh, dear. There's just lots of random things that you could follow up on in this movie and make side stories, sequels.
How long does it take Steve to shave that Christmas tree beard?
There you go.
Well, before we get into scores, does anybody have anything else that they want to talk about that we haven't touched on just yet? No.
I think cover everything. Yeah,
I think we've covered pretty well.
All right, well then let's do final scores, and let's start with Todd.
Okay. There are two things that just popped in my head that I just throw out. They're not really things that are worthy of big discussions, but things that kind of jumped out at me as I'm watching. It bugged me so much that this is another Sony animation film, and there's a character named Steve, and they make no reference to Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. And Steve! That, I just wanted that. Anyway, and then, all right, I'm the last person in the world to want to bring up politics because it's my least favorite subject in the world. But watching this last night, I was so struck by a government official that's ordering them to nuke Santa's sleigh. Looks just like Kamala Harris. I'm sorry. Had to go there.
Oh, is that Eva Longoria's character?
Yes. And for that matter, there's kind of a crotchety old guy behind her at one point that I'd say, that could be Joe Biden. But anyway, enough politics. I hate politics. But no, I'll give this a 4. I think it's a very entertaining film. You know, it's got a few things here and there that I think could be better. But overall, a very pleasant and enjoyable Christmas romp. So, yeah, 4 for me.
All right. Tony, what about you?
Yeah, I think for me, I'm going to go with a 5 for me. Like it's not... Even though Spider-Man 5, it doesn't quite reach the heights for me of films like Chicken Run or Curse of the Were-Rabbit, but it does have that great Christmas charm to it that just makes it such a really likable film to watch. And even though the animation does feel more Sony than Aardman, you can, even if the way it's written, you can you do still get that Aardman feel throughout the film. And he's just a great little, great Christmas classic, that modern Christmas classic. So, yeah, go for a 5 on this.
Nice. Jay?
I go 4.5. It's just a really fun staining film. The fact that it's set in Cornwall helps a lot. It's where we go on holiday very often. In fact, Trelew, real place, is about 30 minutes away from Porthleven, which is our normal destination. We've never been to Trelew, so next time we go to Porthleven, I think we're going to have to take a little detour and just check out this little cul-de-sac. We
went. Find the actual address.
So it's always just nice. Oh, they're going to Cornwall. We'll get there next year, that kind of thing. So yeah, it's a delightful little film. It's not seen by enough people. Hopefully, it being Movie of the Month, we'll get a few more eyes on it this year. And thank you for championing it, Amanda.
Dan, what about you?
Well, let me push my left ventricle back down and tell you that I'm shocked that this isn't a 5 all the way across. This is a 5.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 5, too. I agree. I don't think it's perfect, but it's kind of a perfect Christmas film. So I always enjoy watching it every year, and I'm very, very happy that it won Movie of the Month. I hope it does get more people watching it, and I'm glad that I got to talk about it. So, yeah, that's all I got.
All right. Well, thank you, Amanda. We appreciate that. We're going to take a brief break, and we'll be right back after a few words from a fellow Lamb Podcasting Network show.
Hey, Jay, can I ask you a question?
Sure, Mark. Far away.
How come Carter's always sliding around in Deep Blue Sea?
Well.
And how come Preacher has a bird in the kitchen?
I think...
Should Janice have won an Oscar for all that exposition?
Yeah, I mean...
Who did the sharks hate the most? How far did Jim travel underwater?
About...
Why do they keep calling Brenda Tower?
Mark, please, we've already covered all of these topics and many, many more on Deep Blue Sea, the podcast.
You mean the podcast where we analyze Renny Harlin's 1999 masterpiece Deep Blue Sea, chapter by chapter?
Exactly! Find it everywhere podcasts can be found.
I don't know what we're yelling about!
And we're back. It's time for our weekly rants, raves, and reviews section. So Todd, what have you got to rant, rave, or review for us this week?
Well, do we have like an hour we can spend here on all the Disney announcements that happened a few days ago?
You've got your own podcast for doing that. You can pick one.
I know. Well, yeah, I'll just kind of in general say that, you know, they had what they called Disney Investor Day a few days ago, which I didn't even realize was going on. I clocked out of work and got on my computer. I was like, oh my goodness, look at this thing that's streaming right now. And I got right on and watched. And of course, you know, there were certain things they blacked out if you weren't investors and such. But oh my gosh, all the announcements that they made there, you know, a lot of focus on Disney Plus and some of the shows and original movies that they're going to be working on for Disney Plus. But I guess if I've got to pick one thing to jump in on, the Star Wars announcements, we already knew Taika Waititi was making a Star Wars film, and they really didn't say anything more than that he's working on it. You know, I wanted more out of that. But the announcement of Patty Jenkins doing a Rogue Squadron movie just sounds fantastic. You know, I think I'm not alone in saying, you know, one of the things that was so great about Wonder Woman was, you know, that big spectacular action sequence in the middle of the film. So I think she's, you know, she's definitely going to bring something special with that. And also, if you saw the video where, you know, they announced her and she kind of gave some of her own backstory and you know, the fact that her, I can't remember if it was father or grandfather, but it was a, you know, a military pilot, and she's always wanted to make a movie, you know, that had involved, you know, dogfighting and, you know, that kind of stuff. And so then, you know, to bring that into the world of Star Wars sounds just wonderful. So, I mean, there were a lot of things they announced that that I got excited about with this. But, yeah, right now, I guess.
Well, that's narrowed it down reasonably well. I think some of that may be coming up again in a couple of minutes. So, Tony, how about you? What are you ranting, raving, or reviewing?
So, yeah, I'm going to do a review this week. I mean, there's plenty of stuff from the Disney Investors Day that I could talk about. But I think there's a lot of people get to talk about it. I'm probably going to get to it again sometime, get again later in this episode. So instead, I want to kind of draw attention to a film that I think is a good bit feel fit for winter, but doesn't really get much attention, and that's The Great White Silence. And if you don't know, the Great White Silence is the official video, well, it's the official film record of Robert Falcon Scott's expedition to the South Pole in 1910, I think it was. And so it's footage of the South Pole filmed in 1910, and when the film was in its infancy, and some of the footage that was filmed for as part of that expedition still looks incredible to this day. Like the footage of the glaciers and the mountains, or the wildlife footage of the seals and penguins. I mean, obviously there are some parts there you can tell it was staged, like showing the living conditions of the team that was going to actually make the trip to the South Pole. It's a fascinating look at what the conditions were at that time, and different techniques that the British used during that expedition. And then when it gets to the ending of the film, there is a strong sense of tragedy at the end, because one of those things that's most famous about that expedition is, while Scott and his team reached the South Pole, well, firstly, it ends up being a race between the British and the Norwegians, and the Norwegians got to the South Pole first. But Scott's team, on the way back, I think 11 miles away from the supplies, from their supply, got trapped by a blizzard and ended up dying. And showing the maps and the details and Scott's diary entries of the team coming to realise that they're not going to make it back and they are going to die. It is a good sense of, strong sense of tragedy to that part. I mean, and then also, one thing I have to take into account is it's the footage was from 1910, and there are some very 1910 colonialist attitudes to the explorers. But in terms of just seeing the footage from that time, I would recommend giving it a watch.
Oh, nice. That's available someplace?
In the UK, I know in the UK, the BFI have put it out on Blu-ray and DVD. I'm not sure how available it is outside the UK, though.
Well, it sounds interesting. And I know that there have been films based on this, but I haven't seen any of them, so... something to explore. I'm not sure I can take it here at Christmas time. I may have to wait until January, when I'm going to be depressed anyway. So, Amanda, what are you going to rant, rave, or review?
Well, in keeping with the Christmas movie theme, I'm going to review a movie that we watched a couple weeks ago, The Man Who Invented Christmas, which was not something that I had heard about. I think we saw the trailer for it when we were watching Darkest Hour on Blu-ray. It was one of the trailers that played before. It's a 2017 film about Charles Dickens writing A Christmas Carol. it stars Dan Stevens, and we saw the trailer when we were watching the Blu-ray for something else, and when it came time to start watching Christmas movies, I said, well, let's watch that, and it's quite charming, and it's very Christmassy, and Dan Stevens is great, and so it's just a nice little sort of festive film if people haven't seen it yet. Like I said, I hadn't heard anything about it. It was just from a couple of years ago, and I typically pay attention to new Christmas movies, but I really liked it, and I'd recommend it.
Oh, well, I liked it too, and I would recommend it as well. have you guys seen it?
No, I haven't.
No.
I've heard of it. I think Channel 4 in the UK is going to be showing it sometime over the Christmas period.
Well, it's definitely a good film for the Christmas period. I think you guys will enjoy it. I would give that a strong endorsement as well. Jay, have you got something to rant, rave, or review?
Oh, so many things. Yeah, I have a list. I'll try and rattle through what I want to talk about. That's fine. Like, Todd touched on the Disney investors call, the 4-hour business announcement they made that blew everyone's mind. And yeah, I'm looking forward to all of the Star Wars stuff and all the Marvel stuff they announced. I'm just hooked by my main rave is the title for Ant-Man and the Wasp 3 is Quantumania. I don't need to know anything else. I'm here. Just give me the film now. I don't know what that means, but I want to see it. So that made me very happy. There's a sequel to Enchanted coming out called Disenchanted, and it's about time. God damn it. Freaking love Enchanted. So we've got a Buzz Lightyear inspiration prequel.
Oh, I forgot to mention that. Oh yeah, that's amazing.
Starring Chris Evans as the guy who inspired Buzz Lightyear, which apparently wasn't, you know, Buzz Aldrin or an actual astronaut from our world. It's some fictional guy. So, okay. We've got an Obi-Wan TV series coming out. Great. And Hayden Christensen's going to be in it as Darth Vader. I'm on board for this. I want to see how good he is with a director behind him. I want to, like, someone who cares about actors and what they do. I want to see, the internet's kind of caught on fire with, oh, this is terrible. But I'm very much in the, hey, let's see what you can actually do, Cam. I haven't seen Shattered Glass. I hear he's good in that.
Yes, so I was going to say. There are some, and wasn't there one, the house I built or building the house or?
Oh, My Life as a House, I think it is.
Yeah, something like that. He was in that, and I heard very good things about him in that. So
I can confirm
don't think
that Jumper isn't.
Case.
No, Jumper isn't good. Okay. But I know it has its fans. My co-host is on Deep Blue Sea is a fan of Jumper.
I mean, I quite like Jumper, but mostly for Jamie Bell.
Yeah, Jamie Bell's great in it. Sam Jackson is doing interesting things. I kind of wish we weren't getting another Fantastic Four yet.
Come on.
That we need a good Fantastic Four movie. Yeah. That's not The Incredibles.
Yeah, give it a decade. Yeah. Just give it some time for us to forget.
Sorry, do you want people to remember the Josh Trank one?
No, I don't. I want everyone to forget all of them.
Everyone's already forgotten that one. And see, I am definitely in that camp of being anxious for Fantastic Four done the right way. When my son was young, we subscribed to the Marvel Unlimited thing, and we were, you know, reading through together classic runs of comics, and the one that, you know, we loved and did all the time was Fantastic Four. We started at the beginning and, you know, went up through the original introduction of Silver Surfer and Galactus and Black Panther, all, you know, all those characters come about in Fantastic Four, and it's wonderful. So my son and I are very anxious for Fantastic Four done the right way.
I'm just aware that I've never really been a comics guy, but I'm aware there are hundreds of different comic stories they could tell. They've tried this one several times. Maybe try something else just first. I'm not saying never do this one, but just, you know, maybe it'll be amazing. Who knows? They dropped some trailers for the MCU shows that are coming out, the trailers for Loki, WandaVision, and Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Oh, I love them all. I love how different they all were. I loved Owen Wilson cropping up in the Loki one.
One complaint to have about the Loki trailer, no Richard E. Grant's in the show. They've not showed any Richard E. Grant yet.
I'm sure they will. I'm sure he will be in the show. But just the fact that they had Owen Wilson, he's got grey hair. He's got short grey hair. it's fine. Great. He looked good. He looked good on him. But I just loved. I have no idea what the Loki show is about. There's crumbs dropped, but it's. I don't know where it's going. I can't wait to find out.
I love that they basically. I mean, I don't know if this is really the way they're going or not, but it sure looks to me like they're suggesting that D.B. Cooper was actually Loki, and I love that.
Outside of the Disney stuff, Nicolas Cage has a TV show coming out called The History of Swearwords. Why isn't this everyone's rave? Why isn't everyone talking about this all the time, everywhere? What the hell? I wanted to come on here and rant about how every country other than America is being punished by having to go to the cinema to see all these films that they're getting on their TVs for free next year, which just seems kind of mean. Like, we're the ones who we've done our job and the virus is going down and stuff. You get awarded. You get to see these films in your home. Well, that's just going to annoy Richard, so I won't do that. But my one genuine rave, the thing I actually am culminating to, is a rave slash review. The other day, I found myself with a free evening to watch any film I wanted with my wife elsewhere, and I said, oh, I could watch Mank. There's so many new releases I could watch. or I could go back to 1994 and watch Disclosure. So I went back to 1994 and watched Disclosure, directed by Barry Levinson, starring Michael Crichton, Michael Douglas and Demi Moore, and Donald Sutherland as a fantastic 90s villain, as he does so well. And it's written by Michael Crichton, so I will be reviewing this soon. Disclosure is incredible. Has anyone else here seen Disclosure?
In 1994.
Yes, but not since 94.
Okay. This came on my radar because Big Mouth did a episode devoted to it, and Nick Crow also appeared on the How Did This Get Made podcast talking about it. And I was listening to that podcast. I hadn't seen the episode on it yet. And he was like, okay, if you haven't seen Disclosure, you should watch Disclosure. So I paused it, and I haven't gone back to it yet. And I found a copy, watched Disclosure, and I'm so glad that I did, because it's billed as an erotic thriller, right, where Michael Douglas is like a family man, he's got a job at some kind of computer company that's got a merger coming up at the end of the week, and he's up for a new promotion, he doesn't get it. Instead, it's given to Demi Moore, a woman. And this is the 90s, so that's a plot point, it's a woman. And
can't even teach her to read.
And she's also an ex-lover of Michael Douglas's. And she calls him up to her office for a meeting that evening, and he goes, and she tries to have sex with him. And he is on board for a little while, Demi Moore in 94, so, you know. But he pushes her away, he goes home, doesn't tell anyone. Next day, he comes to work, and she accuses him of sexually harassing her. Dun, dun, dun. And the next hour is a court case of working out what happened with this. But that's not what the film is about. There is a third act development in this film that involves virtual reality, 1990s virtual reality, that must be seen to be believed. I got to the end of this film, my wife appeared, and I had to rewind the DVD to show her this scene of 1994's virtual reality, and goddamn, everybody out there, watch Disclosure. Track it down. It will not be a bad time. It's a horrendously sexist film, especially post-Me Too, but gloss over that. Just watch it for the virtual reality sequence.
You're part of the problem, Jay.
I know. By all means, discuss the sexual harassment and the Me Too-ness of it all, but your main reason for tracking it down should be the depiction of virtual reality in 1994. It's not even what you might imagine, like trying to, you're envisioning like flying through space. Like, no, it's a filing system. It's a virtual reality filing system, and it's everything I've been thinking about for the past 2 weeks since I watched it.
It kind of sounds like that bit, from Community.
Absolutely, that is based on Disclosure. I swear that's where they got it from. With like Jesus wept, that sequence, yeah, it's phenomenal.
My memory is like I said, vague about it. I seem to think that it was a little bit like the things that happen in Minority Report, where Tom Cruise is manipulating everything in the sky in front of him and moving things around and reorganizing and outlining things and. But I don't remember 94 is pretty primitive times.
Yeah, there is that, but there is also a life-size cardboard cutout image of Demi Moore moving at a very slow walking pace, like creeping up behind Michael Douglas whilst he's sorting through some files, while she deletes them one by one. And you cut to her in an office deleting them as you would be expecting, like drag to the to press delete, it's gone. But in the computer world, so slow. She's creeping up behind like she's like in the Halloween film, and she's just this motionless, well, not expressionless, just 2D cutout of Demi Moore, which somehow I wanted to be in the room where they designed this. I want time travelers to dig this up in the future and this be some kind of historical document for what our technology was like in 1994. I loved everything about it. And yeah, Disclosure, everyone, track it down, please. I beg you.
All right. Well, I'm trying to avoid being Cassandra, predicting doom and being ignored. I've been doing that for weeks. I do have something to rave about, but it is related to that. I'm going to rave about Timothée Chalamet and Legendary Pictures. There's some pushback to this plan that Warner Brothers has, or Warner Communication has for releasing all of their material online and streaming simultaneously with the theatrical release this week and that they announced 2 weeks ago. And I'm all for that. Apparently, last night, I didn't see it. Chalamet finished the evening asking us all to be kind to each other and wearing a Legendary Pictures face mask, you know, to protect against COVID. And Legendary is, like I said, they haven't filed a lawsuit yet, but they are definitely upset about the fact that they've put in a bucket load of money on these movies, and Warner's has made this decision unilaterally without consulting their partners on this. And somebody needs to stand up and scream about it, and I'm glad that somebody's doing it, and I'm glad that the talent feels like they need to be a part of that process, too. Bottom line stuff, I know there are monetary considerations, and everybody is worried about whether or not theater's going to open, but I'm just happy to see that other people are not necessarily caving into the hysteria around the COVID closures. I really do hope theaters make it. I'm a little worried. I saw that AMC is going to run out of money next month, and you know, that's the biggest theater chain in the States, and they're a pretty big theater chain around the world, and that's not going to be good news for anybody who wants to continue going to theaters. Even if you don't like the chain theaters, that's what sustains the film business. And so let's get them some product, and let's stand up for movie makers. That's kind of... I was going to talk about Disenchanted, but somebody else has already mentioned it, you know, so we'll just leave it at that.
Double down on it. That's fine. Well, Christopher Nolan and Denis Villeneuve have been vocal about their disdain for the decision as well. So.
Yes, I just think it's not a good decision, but, you know, I'm not in charge. I'm not in charge. All right. Well, thank you all for playing. You get a lovely copy of Christmas, the board game, and that's not exactly what we're going to be playing right now. It's time for our game. Amanda, what have you got for us?
I have a game that I'm calling Santa Who. I'm going to give an actor's name, and you all are going to use your names as your buzzer, and you have to give me the movie that they played Santa in.
Okay.
Pretty straightforward. I have 19 names here and a tiebreaker in case we need it. So it's just whoever gets the most. Like I said, I'll give the name of the actor. You give me the name of the movie. There are a couple that have multiple movies that they played Santa in. Either movie is fine. So yes. Any questions?
No.
Okay. Pretty straightforward. And forgive me if I mispronounce any of these. I'm trying my best. Okay, so first up is Tim Allen.
Richard.
Todd.
Dad.
The Santa Claus and the two sequels.
Crossing that off my list. Ed Asner.
Jay. Oh, hell. Elf.
What was that?
Elf.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. I can see it. He's wearing the red coat, he's got the beard, I can see it.
Oh, yeah, that'll separate him from all the others.
He's got a hat on.
All right. Jim Broadbent.
Jay.
Jay.
Either Arthur Christmas or Get Santa.
Yes, both of those are correct. All right, I'm going to mispronounce this. Jan Rubisch.
Richard.
Dad.
One Magic Christmas.
That is correct.
Wow.
I haven't even heard of that film.
It's a Disney flick.
All right, Richard Attenborough.
Tony. Richard.
Tony.
The remake of Miracle on 34th Street.
Yes, that is correct. All right. Edward Ivory.
Jay. This is a guess. The original Miracle on 34th Street.
No.
That is not correct.
You got a guess, haven't you?
Todd. I'm going to make a guess as well. The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
That is not correct.
I know who it is, that one.
I know that one.
Anybody else?
I would guess, but I'll guess. What the hell? Klaus.
All right. Nope.
Okay.
He's Santa in The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh.
Okay. We all learned something today.
Edmund Gwynn.
Todd.
Tony.
The original Miracle on 34th Street.
All right. Oliver Clark.
I hate myself.
Nobody?
Trying to think of a film with Santa in it. I don't know who plays him. Jay. A Christmas Story.
No.
That's a good guess because the director was Bob Clark. So
Yes, that's why I said it.
Yeah. I was starting to make that decision in my mind to jump in with that guess, but you beat me to it. So.
I was just thinking there's a mall Santa in it.
Yeah. All right. Well, if nobody's got it, it's Ernest Saves Us.
Oh, Mark should have been.
Mark would have gotten it. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Art Carney.
Richard.
Dad.
Oh, you know what? I'm screwed that up because I've got a Twilight Zone episode in my head.
Yeah, I excluded the TV show.
Yeah, damn. So no?
No.
Jay. Let's just play a game. Yeah. Kiss Saves Christmas.
There's no such movie, but there should be.
Anybody else? No. He is Santa in The Great Santa Claus Switch and The Night They Saved Christmas.
Okay.
All right. John Call. Anybody?
Richard.
Richard.
A very John Wick Christmas.
Close.
We're all just making up Christmas movies.
Yeah, okay. That's it.
He is Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
Oh, wonderful movie.
That's what I was thinking of when I thought, okay, Saved Christmas.
That movie has the best theme song of all time. Pray for Santa Claus. You know, anyway.
All right. Kurt Russell.
Richard.
Todd.
I think Todd.
The Christmas Chronicles. One and two.
Yes. All right. Paul Giamatti.
Tony. Jay.
I think Tony.
Fred's Claus.
Oh, damn it.
Yes.
All tied up to a piece.
I know. Spider. All right. Alec Baldwin.
Jay.
Tony.
Jay.
Rise of the Guardians.
That is correct.
Been waiting for that one.
Forgot about that one.
Everyone forgot about that one. It's not a good film.
I love Rise of the Guardians.
I didn't think it was a very good film. I like Hugh Jackman as Easter Bunny. It's just great.
All right. Richard Ryle? Real?
Oh, I know who that is.
Yeah, it's so many films. He's played him like 20 times, and I can't think of any of them. I think he's the guy who's played Santa the most.
I think so, yeah. He was in
a... None of us know any of them.
Name a Hallmark Christmas movie.
I might as well just guess. Todd. I'm just going to guess Scrooged.
No. Well, I have two listed here. If nobody else has a guess.
Richard.
Dad.
Was there a Santa in Jingle All the Way?
I don't know if there was, but if there was,
okay.
I'll take a stab. Jay.
Jay.
A very Harold and Kumar Christmas.
That is correct. He was also Santa in the Search for Santa Paws. So.
That was me for my next guess.
All right, Leslie Nielsen.
Ooh. Todd. Oh, I'm trying to remember the name of this. Is it All I Want for Christmas?
That is correct. All right. Let's see. Mel Gibson.
Richard
J. Todd.
J, I think.
Hey, Batman. I must have a delay.
Sorry.
House.
You should listen to the Lambcast, Richard.
Hold on.
All right, let's see. J.K. Simmons.
So Jay.
Okay, I heard somebody right before Jay. Was that Tony?
It was Tony. Yeah. Tony.
Tony.
Klaus.
Yeah.
That's correct. Anna Kendrick.
Jay.
Tony. Todd.
Jay.
Noel.
That is correct.
Is that worth watching? Has anyone seen it? I haven't seen it yet.
I liked it.
I think I did see it. It was okay.
It's only just come out on Disney Plus. Like, we've literally just got it in the UK.
It came out last year here. All right, and the last one, Billy Bob Thornton.
Jay.
Richard.
Jay.
Bad Santa.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Tony and I were both waiting for James Cosmo.
I was also waiting for David Huddleston.
Yeah, I was waiting for David Huddleston too.
So Jay, you won by quite a bit. You had 7 by my count. Todd had, Tony had 3, and Dad, you had 2. Sorry about the delay.
I don't know. There's a crime going on somewhere.
Open the door next time, Richard, and just go shout at her.
That's what I should do. All right, well, Jay, that means you get to plug first.
Yay. I love Christmas films. So, Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. We've got a guest this week who you may be familiar with. It's Todd. He joined us to talk about an episode, a chapter of Deep Blue Sea. And we've got upcoming guests. We've got Brian Raftery, who's a author of a book about 1999 films. And past weeks, we've had Mark Armstead from French to Sunday. He was a great guest to talk about omelette making for an hour, somehow one of our longest chapters in the 54-second long segment of the film. So yeah, Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. If you're a fan of Deep Blue Sea, come listen. If you're not, then watch it more enough times so you become a fan of Deep Blue Sea. What's wrong with you? I was also a guest on Exploding Helicopter with Will Slater to talk about Rampage. That'll be coming out soon. And yesterday I recorded an episode with Howard Kasner for Pop Art where we talked about Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and The Thin Man, two Christmas mystery films. So I had a great time on that one. And, you know, lifevsfilm.com is my site. You can read reviews there, hopefully of Disclosure coming up soon, as well as The Thin Man. And I just watched The Best Years of Our Lives as well, which was a pretty great film too. And I watched Little Women last night. I still don't like Timothy Chalamet. The new one, the recent one. It's been added to the 1001 list, so I'll try and get a review up for that one. But I still don't like Timothy Chalamet. It didn't help. I'm sorry. But that's my plugs. Lots of things.
Tony, what are you plugging?
Okay, so over on my site, I've recently done a post going through 10 of my favourite cinemas, just as a little tribute to the cinema experience. And also done a review recently of a pretty niche film, I'd say. It's one that's right in my wheelhouse, but I guess it wouldn't be a lot of other people's, called Ashens and the Polybius Heist. And then over on the LAM, director's chair is still up for Paul Feig.
And I can strongly endorse Tony's post on the cinema theaters. It was really enjoyable. I really would recommend it. I liked it quite well.
I don't think I've been to 10 different cinemas.
I mean, I've put a good few
you can't reach them by bicycle.
Yeah, I mean, I did put a good few, some experiences of like LAM meetups, like Pitch House Central when we did the meetup in 2015, and then when I met Rebecca from Almost Ginger and we went to see Killing of a Sacred Deer at home in Manchester. It was just I've got a few memories from being part of the LAM in that post as well.
Yes, it was, and lots of cool pictures. There are cinemas that are designed differently, and I like that too. Todd, I know that you've got stuff to talk about.
Well, yeah, Jay took one already, of course, Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, which, I mean, it was so much fun. It was great fun. You know, we don't just talk about a minute and 47-second sequence where Scoggins gets killed. We, you know, I mean,
spoiler alert.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, I love that.
Well,
you know,
I've still not seen Deep Blue Sea.
Oh, that's why you haven't been on the show yet, Tony.
We talk about Tremors. We talked about Police Academy. We talked about sharks coming down the stairs, like, and She's All That is amazing. So it was a lot of fun. I was also recently on the Popcorn Auteur podcast with Chris and John. We talked about the films written and directed by John Milius. So that was also a lot of fun. Check that out. As for my podcasts, a little bit behind on things. There should be an episode popping up probably by the time this episode is up with Jeanette Ward, where we talk about original gangstas. And Walt Sent Me should be having an episode of that soon as well. Of course, check out my blog, forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com, and my other blog, which has nothing to do with movies, all about cool stuff around Denver, which is where I live. It's called In and Around Denver, iadenver.blogspot.com.
Nice. Amanda, what's Hollywood Consumer got going?
I have nothing new up. It's been slow over at Hollywood Consumer, but I was on a recent Lambcast, and so I'm going to promote it.
Good. Yes, you can promote several of those.
The Arthur Christmas Show.
Well, if you haven't yet listened to the episode discussing The Croods, new movie, I was on that. That was quite a bit of fun. And I was also on the episode discussing Freaky, which was also a fun episode. So I would encourage you to go listen to those right now.
That's right. And believe me,
even if you haven't watched the films, I can recommend them both.
You know, there's nothing wrong with promoting your podcast on your podcast, because the networks do it all the time. In fact, isn't that what you were complaining about earlier? You know, Open Season was being promoted by a Sony film. Hey,
absolutely.
This is just product placement. I have nothing new to plug except the podcast that you are listening to right now. So I'm not going to do that. We'll just move on. And Jay, can you open up the poll for Movie of the Month and tell us what the opportunities are?
Yes, this is a whole new year of films available to us. 2021, January's Movie of the Month poll is opening now. We have 8 contestants, 8 films to be championed. First up, Meg Hyland from Megan's Movie Alphabet is championing The Red Shoes. She has promised to champion that until it wins, so vote for that one if you want. You'll be hearing about it at some point. The same goes for Sean Homerig from 1001 Movies. The 1001 Movies podcast is championing The Last of Sheila until it wins. So that's the only two that's happening with, as far as I'm aware. Actually, no. I think Lisa Leahy from The Critical Movie Critics is championing Coherence again. I think that may be joining the flock of she's going to keep on keeping on until it wins. Howard Kasner from Rantings and Ravings and the aforementioned Pop Art podcast is championing Dark Star, John Carpenter's first film. Aaron Newirth from The Code of Zeke is championing The Apartment. Mark Hoffmeyer from Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, and Movies from Self-Flix is championing Timeline from 2003, which I have on good authority is terrible, but not from him. So, you know, maybe it's great. Amanda, you're championing The Way, Way Back. Why? Yeah.
Well, I also championed it a month ago, I think, and didn't win. So I'm just going to keep pushing it as those other people are doing. It's Sam Rockwell. And it's about a water park, and it's a coming-of-age story about this kid, and it's just fun. I know it's a summer-themed movie, and winter can get pretty cold, so hopefully it'll be something that people could watch and warm up a little bit, and also laugh.
Yeah, very nice. And Todd, you're championing The Sting. Same question. Yes.
It's just a wonderful movie. It's one of my favorites. It's got a special place in my heart because back when we got our first VHS machine in 1983, Christmas 1983, one of the first tapes my parents brought home, and my parents were not big movie people, but they said, you've got to watch this movie, and it was The Sting. And I just have loved it ever since. It's just got a wonderful ensemble cast doing all kinds of nasty things to Robert Shaw, so... Amanda should love it.
Deservedly so, by the way.
Yes.
And I forgot, Richard, I was going to close out the James Bond draft, if we have time.
Oh, yes.
Which is just loading now. We didn't get a lot of votes for the James Bond fantasy draft. I'm a little disappointed. But a few weeks ago, 6 of us got together to build our fantasy James Bond films. It was myself, Richard, Mark Hoffmeyer, Jeanette Ward, Movie Rob, and David Brooke. People have been voting, and I hadn't realized there is a tie. Goddamn. Well, one of the people in part of the tie is on today's show. So do I let them win, or do I take the win away from them? They already host the podcast. I mean, shouldn't that be enough?
That's enough for me. It's fine. Well, as long as it's not you.
It's not me.
It'll be like back in 1983 when there were two James Bonds. You know, we had Sean Connery and Never Say Never Again. We had Roger Moore and Octopussy. So now this time you've got two winners.
Well, hang on. We'll take a poll, and I feel like Amanda might be biased. So between Tony Todd and Amanda, which is the better title? We have Kill Twice, Live Forever, or The Spy with the Golden Thunderball Only Dies Twice. Which is the better film title?
The second one doesn't fit on a marquee well, so I go with the first one.
Yeah, I go with the first one.
Richard, congratulations, you won.
Victory.
You won by one vote, just beating out David's team. Mine sadly got very few votes, which I don't understand. But hey, Jeanette's only got one, so she got because she loaded hers with Timothy Dalton. With Pierce Brosnan. So congratulations, Richard, you won the James Bond draft. Well done.
Well, you know, I don't know what glory there is in first place if second place went to a beaver, as they say. You know, that's Canadian money, by the way. That's the joke. All right, well, once again, let me thank all of our guests for being with us this week. Jay, I appreciate your coming back and spending some time with us.
Always happy to talk about Aardman films and Christmas films. So the Aardman Christmas film seemed perfect.
Tony, thank you for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Todd, we'll be hearing from you soon. Thank you.
There's always time for a bow.
And Amanda, I think I'll be seeing you soon, too.
Yes, thank you for having me on the show.
All right. Let's put a bow on it then. Thanks, everybody.
And may 100% of your Christmases be white.
There you go.
Jingle, jingle, jingle.
You've been listening to the Lambcast. If you have an idea for a show or would like to join us on the Lambcast, contact us at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Find us on Facebook, just search for Lambcast, or on Twitter, at Lambcast. The Lamb site can be found at largeassmovieblogs.com, and please head over to iTunes to leave us a review.
Go to hell.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.